that had a general, it was a general class ship, boy, that class, it would carry about 2,000 same troops. We had on it, our unit, we had two general hospitals with their doctors and their nurses. And then I know our unit was a pretty unit. We assigned, took men in, housed them and fed them as they came from the States. And the Army would send them prescription one, 107-45. They want some demolition specialists, so you dig them out and send them out. But this ship pulled up the aisle, and we were right against it as though here. And the water went right straight down as far as you could see, just as clear as a crystal. Oh, it wouldn't have been too bad a place to stay.
I thought you kind of liked that.
Yeah.
Now, did you get leave time and while you were in?
Oh, yeah.
Where did you find leave?
We got leave in Italy. And that was sent for R&R, which means rest and recuperation. You really need it when you get back. But they sent us to Rome. They had a big place up there. The fighting had been all north through the hill country of Italy. Up on the Po by then, we were south of there. But we got sent up to see what Rome was like. And they were sending guys all over. They sent one fellow and two of his buddies to Greece. And a bunch of them went to the Riviera. And the cook who had family up there, so they could get in. But the three of us went to Rome. And all of us each of us had 4 years of life. And so we couldn't speak Italian or anything. But we knew a lot about Rome and Italian history and its relationship to Western civilization, and we were tickled to get up there. And one boy, Vic Fisher, and was a ranking Catholic educational system in the United States. And he was a chemist, but he had had a strong, he was always educated in Catholic school. The other boy had 2 years at Yale, went on to become an MD when he got back and out and took it back to school. And headed for the Vatican. He had been at the Spanish Steps, and Lord Byron and Keating and But anyhow, we went to those places, and we went to and got into the Vatican. And they had really loosened things up. The war had ended. The Catholics were very interested in presenting a different face to the public than they had a reputation for. And most of what was said about them was unjust. Anyhow, so we got in there, and there weren't many GIs there. Most of them had other things in mind in Rome rather than go to the Vatican and a bunch of what. We got in to look into the Sistine Chapel. We couldn't go in because that was when it was starting to drop some stuff off. And they've since rebuilt all that. But we could look in, and then we went through big rooms twice the size of a high school classroom, three times the size. It's magnificent. Oil paintings and artwork you ever saw in your life that had been collected from elsewhere in Italy and brought there for safekeeping and to keep Hermann Goering from getting his hands on it. And as a matter of fact, the guy who commanded the forces in Germany was a profile. He'd been a Rhodes Scholar, and yet here he was, the German general commanding, and he was a very, very general. Managed to get a bunch of the paintings out of Cassino, the Abbey, before anything happened. And he knew about this. Goering's men would just show up and take all the artwork and take it to Germany. He had it solid all over, you know, and it got scattered all over the world. It was one of the things that the Roper got mixed up in trying to straighten out. Well, anyhow, we saw that, and we were wandering around the halls, and we were upstairs where you normally tourists would never get. And a Catholic priest came out and said, "Would you like to meet the Pope?" This was it for him. And we went, "Yeah, we'll meet the Pope." And we went into this room, and it was a great big ante room, big room. And the Swiss guard was in there. And they were dressed in their very picturesque uniform. And they carry a big halberd, very personal guard. They come from Switzerland, the Catholics, and they wore these kind of big knickers and helmets with all this stuff on them, and they carry this thing, it's sort of a spear and a hatchet at the same time. And they were standing over at one end, a number of them not doing much. All of a sudden, they kind of, we were lined up behind this rail. All of a sudden, they all hit those big spears on the ground. He came from the far off corner of the room. He came through a door. And he swept in there a hell of a minute that guy came in the room. And you could just feel it. He had charisma. The door started down at the other end. And he had something to say to each GI. The Catholic standing next to me, I thought he was going to hyperventilate. And then this Pope coming and got closer and closer and got up there and finally got to us and, you know, took my hand. I always use this to my Catholic friends in Harlow. Mrs. Moore always said to her son, "Yeah, why don't you do like him? Oh, he does. He's seen the Pope. He's a good boy. He turned out all right." I couldn't do anything wrong where she was concerned. But then I tried to get, and I think I've got 3 pictures, but they're just fleeting, of Pius XII, the cello. And that was kind of the highlight of my trip in Italy. It really was.
That was very unusual that you got to see him. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, like that, because he actually gave us an audience.
Oh, gosh.
Which normally, you know, you don't get that either.
What a treat for you. Do you know where you were when you heard the news that the war was over?
It was in 24th level, definitely. And we had kind of small about telling us. I'm not sure they told us the day that it was over. They may have waited till the next morning. They got all the guns away. That's right. We turned in all our guns. Then they said they had an announcement to make. Because when you're in the military, and you're a private, you're at the end of the communication line. You're the last guy to find out anything.
Okay. Do you remember how you got home or where you went once everything was over?
I was in Japan.
Uh-huh.
I finally got on a Troop ship home, the herald of the morning. Old Liberty ship, listed about 2 degrees all the way across the Pacific. It had nothing but band for the... But we didn't give a damn, we were going home. And I met fellas I trained with, and remember when we went under the Golden Gate Bridge? They were still, the war had been over quite a while, but they still were quiet. As we got closer, all of a sudden these fighters, Navy planes, flew right over us and checked us out to make sure we were legitimate. Not only that, some fool with, you know, a flag at the stern, whether for a joke or you run it upside down, the American flag. Well, that's a distress signal. So that's why these planes came down and really took a look at us. And we went on in, docked in a warehouse about the size of Billings. Right there, it was huge. And unloaded boats. Shot. I remember one in San Francisco. So we had not had what we wanted football. I found a place where they made them big and thick, and we just sat there and drank. Remember another, you know, you develop these appetites for foods you can't get. When I was in the Philippines, got sent up to, there's a movie coming that you want to see, about the Ghost Rider, about the rescue of the PWs from Camp O'Donnell, up on the Rotolingan Gulf. They made a movie of it. And they sent us up there to a sign in the war. I tell you, it was supposedly over, but there were Japs who didn't just, they were very hard to get to quit and hard to communicate with. And we were right on the road that comes from Cabanaclon and goes on up to then along the Rimgayan Gulf towards Baguio. They were fighting up in the hills. That's where that little girl lives now. But anyhow, we went into the mess to eat. We got assigned to this. There was a mess. And they sent us up with a bunch of, they had a whole shipload of replacements come over that they had to do something there. And we sat down to eat, and these two guys were sitting like there and there, and they had a big jar of mustard sitting in front of them. And they were taking that out and eating it just like a spoon, just a spoonful of it. And I started to reach for it, because I thought it was a mess. They're private stock. It had been sent to them. They'd been over there a long time. And they had this intense craving for something like mustard. I mean, boy, if I'd have touched that, they'd have been on my head right now. Trust me, my fellows would go ahead. And they were just eating it like that.
That's not something we could do, is it?
Yeah, well, evidently a lot of the troops that were in the Pacific a long time developed cravings for those kind of things.
How did you feel about how the war ended? About the bombing, Hiroshima? What was that?
Oh, I've gone through 2 stages of that. When it first happened, that was it. And that was, say, it kept me alive, let's put it that way. That was, and that's the way I was sold to it. But frankly, it was unnecessary. Kind of been trying. The history's just getting caught up to what was going on. Japan had been trying for over a year to find some way to call a halt to the whole thing. And they couldn't get a response from Roosevelt. And then Truman, they wouldn't talk to him. stupid. The worst thing that happened in World War II was unconditional surrender. It caused more lives than as a result of all the war than any other single thing. And that's not the popular way of looking at it. But it's what the historians are telling. That, in the same way Germany, we could have headed that off. Churchill, I used to be a great admirer of Churchill. I'm not anymore. Roosevelt about like a good elementary teacher to handle a third grader.
Care to tell us more about that? It's interesting that you were there and now you, after reading and studying.
Well, I came home from the war with the idea of finding out why it happened and then try to find out ways to keep it from happening again. Of course, I found out that I couldn't find out the ways to keep it from happening again or much more elusive than trying to find out why it happened in the first place. And I read a lot of, I would say the first 20 years after I got out, I could see nothing wrong with anything that we did. And in fact, one of the first books I got hold of, I was trained as an economist. And my dad sent me a book while I was still in the staging area in Naples. But it turned out it was causing a big stink in the academic community of the Road to Serfdom by a man, Austrian, by the name of Heinrich. He described the method by which that country falls into serfdom, where you become victims of your government, so to speak. Well, that started me thinking. And then there's Scherer's book. And that's sort of a big hang-up where I really had a lot of trouble. Scherer wrote Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And then it is where I found out about the Einsatz groups, the ones who carried out the Jewish people, the Holocaust. I came to grips with that. I've had to say, did we have to go after Hitler to have stopped that? Because the truth of it is, when you said bad things about Pacelli, Pius XII, for not speaking out strongly. So he actually did a hell of a lot more for the Jews and Roosevelt. Roosevelt never opened his trap. He never used all that. You know, he was supposed to be a leader of the free world. He never used that weapon to come down on Hitler and warn him that that had to stop. He never did. Then to say that we really had to go in and do away with Hitler, to ignore the fact that we had ignored a lot of opportunities to forestall all that, even after he became Chancellor of Germany. And I really believe that Roosevelt, not Churchill, did not want to see the British Empire dissolve and successful. It remains a vivid demon. And that affects their trade and economics and their position in the world as a power. They're definitely not a power anymore. But actually, if he had not, he misled Roosevelt on a lot of things. And they have a organization in England, they even have it in World War I, that its purpose was to scheme up false stories of atrocities that the Germans were supposed to have committed. But we were cut off from communication with Germany. The cable, we had no communication before we went into the war with Germany, per se, because the British had cut the cable. And they successfully with their navy embargoed any trade or commerce or ships going to German harbor. It's all out in the long run. Or it could have been avoided.
That's a tragedy, isn't it, when you think of it?
Yeah, in Japan was the same way.
And then
for us to get all huffy, we bombed Dresden and Frankfurt, firebombed, and we killed thousands of old people and mothers and children. And that, they like collateral damage. They did that deliberately. When they firebombed Dresden, they were not making any attempt to bomb a military establishment. They wanted to set a firestorm going that just consumed the city. Did the same thing in Tokyo. And been bombing with the B-29s from high level and not having much success. And losing a lot of 29s, we're getting shot down. Bombing General Kennedy. He changed their tactics. He was in the Air Force. They came in at mid-level, low. By low, they meant about 10 or 11,000 instead of 20 or 30. Went over Tokyo, and they used nothing but firebombs. Stuff that would start fires. Paper cities. And the fire in Tokyo just engulfed the city in Yokohama, and you get a firestorm going. Yeah, some of the people were killed instantly because this huge flames come in and takes all the oxygen out of the air. They suffocate. And others just burned up. And that was done when they knew the Japanese were ready to quit. And then when they dropped the two bombs. I used to think that was okay. I don't even know.
You've done a lot of history reading, haven't you? You've really studied.
Most of my books are at home. Probably have a library in my life, and I have between 2,500, 3,000 books.
That's wonderful. You were hungry to learn more. What was the first thing you did when you got home? Do you remember that? And how the community responded to you?
Oh, the community responded great. Well, I had to get home. I went to the ranch. Scotty was still working in Milwaukee, where I dropped her off. I went on back there, got our car up, picked her up when he came back to the ranch. That simple.
You covered just about everything there is. Did you have benefits, and have the benefits been good?
Oh, yeah, as far as, in fact, I didn't use any of the educational benefits. I'll say this, I think they were a good thing for a lot of people. They went on and got college educations and improved their whole life by going back to school. I got an offer from my alma mater. They all offered me a letter, and my dad sent it to me in Italy. They offered to finance my getting a doctorate in economics, and I financed that. Plus, if I would agree to teach for 5 years after I got through my doctorate.
A rancher.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of glad I did. I would have met a lot of interesting people doing the other.
You made the most of where you were.
Yeah.
I think we pretty much covered all this. Have you been keeping in touch with the people you've met there?
Particularly young Benny Wright, the doctor. Yes, because he came out and worked for me for between these junior and senior year at Yale. He worked for us one summer. Showed up walking down the creek with a seersucker suit on, two bags. He's a character. I've got pictures of him. So. But here's a...
I'll just turn this off right now.